Welcome to The Culture's Money. The Culture's Money is a podcast created to discuss how we multiply the $1.2 trillion in spending power possessed by the American Black community through the vehicles of investing, personal finance, ownership, networking, and most importantly, collaboration. We are the culture, baby, and we are the financing that we've been seeking. Now, let's get into this money talk. And here's your host, Jamal Vitos.
Okay, welcome back. Welcome back, culture members. This is episode, I think we're almost at 20 for this one. So once we get to 20, I'll give you guys a big round of adieu. I appreciate you guys listening, taking the time and listening to the podcast whenever you can. I'm very excited about this particular episode because real estate is a big thing in the community. We have a lot of wholesaling, a lot of renovation, a lot of people being first-time homeowners. So I thought we would bring some experts on to talk about the various processes and how you prepare to get into the game, any aspect of which you're trying to enter. This particular guest, one I know from the partnership, we've been on Instagram for some years talking about various political things and financial things. I'm happy to have her and a partner on. I would like to introduce Miss Tiffany and Brandy to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
No, I appreciate you guys coming on, giving me some time. I think I saw Brandy one time when we were at the same dentist, and
Yes, get our teeth clean.
Very numb. I remember.
Shout out to Dr. Streisdale. And I think I messaged Tiff with like, I think I saw your partner.
I remember.
So that's funny. But me and Tiff have been conversing for some years over various real estate and like local politics things. So I appreciate you guys to come on and talk with me. So I like to generally start off with the guests kind of telling the audience how they got in their particular field and what drew them there. So I'm not sure which one of you want to go first.
So I'll go first. This is Tiffany. So prior to getting into real estate 6 years ago now, I was in property management for almost 9 years. Mm-hmm. And initially I got into real estate because I wanted to invest in real estate and kind of wanted to do my own thing and not have to hire a real estate agent. And probably a year in, I had a high school friend who was being deployed, and she had real estate clients that she was working with. And she knew that I had my license. And so she referred a couple clients from high school, high school friends, people that we had went to high school with. And I was like, well, I guess. And after that, it was pretty much history at that point. And now it's been 2 years. I've been full time in real estate. Prior to that, I was dual career. So, that's kind of my story.
And this is Brandy. So I also have a background in property management as well. So just kind of being in real estate in different facets for me kind of, I guess, piqued my interest. So the truth is that I used to watch this show called Million Dollar Listing, and I used to be amazed by the commissions that they received. Little did I know that what I saw on TV was just TV. So none of the things that you see on the show are actual factual. But that I became really interested from, the TV shows and how it glamorized real estate. And while real estate is great, it's not what you see on TV. So I've always been an entrepreneur. I actually owned a clothing store for several years and just really wanted to try to find my footing. I knew my footing was in sales and entrepreneurship, but I just couldn't exactly figure out where I would fit in. So real estate happened to just be one of those things that I fell into. I was a new mom. I was a stay-at-home mom, and I decided to get my license, and I just kind of hit the road and hit the ground running from there.
Okay, so it's two things I kind of want to talk about there that you talked about. One, Brandy, I want you to kind of expand on the whole how TV glamorizes what the industry really is, because I feel like social media kind of does the same thing, whether it be in real estate or my field in finance and investing and that type of thing. And also, both of you guys, ironically, were in property management. So did that kind of give you a concept of how you didn't want to manage properties based off, because I'm assuming you guys work for big real estate companies owning apartments. So kind of dive into both of those.
So I'll just kind of touch on how TV and social media definitely glamorizes real estate. I mean, I think that from what I saw, their markets are different everywhere. The Los Angeles market is significantly different than the Baltimore real estate market will ever be. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know that we've seen a $100 million house in the state of Maryland ever. Mm-hmm. But it kind of glamorized it and kind of made me feel like, wow, you know, yes, the sky is the limit. And while that is true, I do live by that. The things that you see on these shows, for instance, if they have a $40 million listing, one, to get a $40 million listing, I mean, you are working like you are. I mean, you're working extremely hard to even get there, to get to a $1 million listing. You're working hard. That's if that's something that, you know, an agent would ever actually accomplish. So that, and just seeing the commissions that they make, realistically, you know, that's going to pull you into any kind of TV show or get your interest if you see that someone's making $150,000 commission. But what I think a lot of people don't realize is sometimes there are deals where you make no money. There are deals where you make a couple dollars. It really just depends. There's deals where you have to spend money to make money. There's deals where you are, you know, consoling clients. There's deals where it just really is not what TV depicts it to be. It is very much a people business. And a lot of the shows lead with money, you know, like this is this $150,000 commission that you're going to receive. And it even gives people a perception, I would say, when it comes to social media, where you can be a part-time agent. And Tiff can kind of dabble into that part of the conversation. There's no such thing as a part-time agent. If you are dual career, meaning you have a full-time job and you work real estate, you have a real estate license and you're actively doing business, you have two full-time jobs. And I think you actually will be working harder based upon conversations that she and I have had. To maintain both careers. So yeah, social media and TV, you can kind of be whoever you want to be on TV and social media. But in reality, it is not what it seems on TV. It's very different. It's a lot more stressful.
And I think to add to that, what TV and what social media shows is that there is no work that goes into it, that it's something that you get your real estate license. And because you have your real estate license, everyone that you know is going to reach out to you to purchase a home. So it's not going to require any work on your behalf. It also, I think, glamorizes that the success equates to the monetary, the success equates to the things that you can buy from all this money that you make, opposed to the success really comes down to you perfecting your craft, you doing the work. This is very much a self-driven business that real estate school does not teach you how to do real estate, how to, you know, get clients, how to maintain those clients. Real estate school doesn't teach you any of that. It does take a lot of additional research on your own. So those are the parts that's not shown. The process is never shown. The process is never discussed. It's the beginning all the way to the end without, you know, the meat and potatoes in the middle.
And it's interesting you guys say that because I think in most fields, they drive in the hard skills and neglect the soft skills. And for most people don't know what the soft skills is. It is the selling. It is the personal skills. It is the being able to market yourself, because just because you get a license or a certificate, your doors aren't just going to flood open with clients. And you got to kind of work that narrative. So, Tiffany, we're kind of talking about everyone you know. It's not going to give you their business just because you got into the field. So was it, did you have to prove your skill set with strangers first before people you knew started seeking your service?
I think that it's kind of twofold. I think you have, you know, you have your friends, you have your family that will support just because. They could care less what you're doing. They're going to support just because. Then you have the other people. What we run into in our industry is people don't want us in their business. People that we know feel that we'll have access to a lot of their personal information, whether it be credit or whatever financial situation that you have going on. They don't want us to be a part of that. You may have a friend, and then there's a spouse or, you know, a boyfriend or a significant other that's involved. That's like, well, I don't want her in our business, but we'll invite her to the cookout. So you kind of deal with both of those things. I think more so the latter, of people just feeling like they don't want you in their personal business because of whatever they have going on. And I think the other side of that is then you'll have people who will support you just because they know you. And then people who, because they know you, are like, yeah, you know, maybe it's, and she's doing something else. Or it just really depends on the person. I've seen, I think, a little bit of, not me personally, I think more of the, I don't want you in my business, or I thought you'd see all of this information, where truly that's more of your, you know, your mortgage lender, your loan officer is seeing that information. Our job is to guide you and help you navigate through something that is very foreign. Not everybody buys a house every day. It's not anything that you're going to do consistently unless you are an investor, and that's something completely different. We are here to support you, to educate you, and provide you with the knowledge to make the best decisions for you and your family based upon what you're looking for, what your needs are, where you're looking, your financial situation, what you want to pay compared to what you can afford. That's what we're there for, and to navigate you through, you know, contracts and the verbiage and your commitment and requirement to those contracts and the consequences for not meeting them and keeping you on track with dates and deadlines, not to be in your business. You know, we hold, I know Brandy and I really hold our ethics, morals, integrity are very important to us. So confidentiality is something that is very huge, where I've had two friends that were looking at the same time, and not once did I say anything to the other. And then they would say, well, you didn't tell me she was looking for houses. That wasn't my place to tell you that. So I think that's, you know, that one piece. And I'm sure that there are agents that maybe share a little bit more than they should, but I don't think that that's the masses. I think, you know, a lot of times in many industries, we take the bad and then we amplify that, and then that's the entire industry.
And just to piggyback a last thing off of what Tiff said, we end up taking a lot of calls from buyers or sellers who, you know, have decided that they don't want us in their business, which we don't know too much of their business. But we end up taking a lot of calls from them when they are not getting the service that, you know, the level of service that we offer at Harris Hawkins & Co. You know, and unfortunately at that point, we're not able to advise them because we don't represent them. So, it is a major myth that we know everything about your financial picture when purchasing or selling a home.
Now, I've seen a lot of realtors on Instagram and other platforms, but I have never seen the level of, like, I even went back before preparing for this, the level of commitment to the education part that you guys do, like, the programs that people can look into, the way basically you're selling people on the fact that you're not just going to buy them a house or accept them up to buy a house. You're going to educate them on the process. Was that something that was purposely done, or you guys kind of through your experience in the real estate field felt like that was a missing piece for certain buyers?
So for me, growing up, I grandmother, aunts, uncles, you know, a lot of family members lose homes. So that was another piece to me getting into real estate, wanting to understand, like, where is the missing piece? Or even once in real estate, you have people call and now want to sell a house, and their situation may not have been fully explained to them. So I know prior to even meeting Brandy, that was something that was huge for me individually, and something that we now lead with in training, and really the mission behind Harris Hawkins & Co. is that it's about the knowledge first. There should never be anything put in front of you that has not been explained, nor that you have a good enough, you know, understanding of. Not saying that, you know, we all can dissect a contract the same way, but it's been explained in a way that you're comfortable with moving forward. That every step of the way, if you have a question, that your question is being answered. And that's another reason that we are very, very strategic and serious about who we align ourselves with in our business, because we want to make sure that the loan officer that we referred you to is giving you the same level of customer service and answering all of your questions. I don't care how many times you ask the same question. That's what we're here for. So I think that for me, it was more personal. And I think just in our, you know, culture, our generation, and even the generation before us, a lot of times we don't, you know, we're not reading, or things are overlooked or not really explained to us because of these perceptions and stereotypes. So I think it is important to give people the opportunity, our clients, no matter your race, your age, you're going to get the same experience, that there was nothing, no stone unturned, that there was nothing that was not presented to you in a way for you to understand and be comfortable with moving forward through the process.
Okay, so Brian, you agree with that? That's the same reasons why you guys got together for the educational part?
Definitely. Tiffany and I just happen to have, I would say, all of the same morals. Like she said, when it comes to integrity, me personally, my parents purchased a home. I would say I was probably about maybe 13 or 14, maybe. I think about 13 and 14. I don't recall them explaining any of that process to me, or including us in that process. You know, not that that's wrong. They were probably just going through the motions because it is a large, you know, it's a large purchase and a big deal. And again, something foreign to them. But I know that with Tiffany and I, with our children, we will continue to include them in, you know, the process of home buying or selling a home. So for me, yes, definitely education, integrity, and everything just aligned.
I want to dive into you guys' partnership for a second. As I said, I've been following you both, so I saw it from the infancy to when you guys opened that beautiful massive place that you guys just opened. I saw the video on Instagram, which is well done for promo, and you guys do bomb work whenever you put it up. How did that kind of, where did you guys meet? When did, you know, the ideation to partner and become this whole brand of Harris and Hawkins together, when did that all take place?
So we were previously at a smaller a boutique brokerage. Together, and Tiffany actually had a surgery, and I probably knew her for a few months at this point, and I would just literally call her every day and just check on her. I would call her every day. We didn't really know each other very well. She was trying to, like, you know, play hard to get, like she didn't want to be my friend. But I was like, come on, girl, be my friend. But yeah, I would call her every single day and I would check on her. That's just how I am with people that I care about or friends. So she eventually warmed up and she would stop hanging up on me. And
I never hung up. I did think she was a little weird. I would tell my husband, like, I don't know what's up with this girl. She calls me every day.
So that is really how we started to connect. So time passes. We're still at the same brokerage. And one day we ended up going to lunch together at a sushi restaurant. And we had just kind of been feeling the same way, like, I need more. I don't know what more is. We don't know what we don't know. But we were ready for change. So we ended up moving to another brokerage. Tiffany and I did not plan on being at the same brokerage. It was just kind of like this place just kind of fit us both and what we needed at that point. So we went to another large brokerage, and maybe several months passed, and we decided that we wanted to work together and become the Harris Hawkins Home Team. Once the Harris Hawkins Home Team was born, we decided that we wanted to, you know, kind of give people what we didn't have. So we began to add team members. Am I missing something?
No, that's kind of how it happened.
Okay. So yeah, we began to add team members, and and it just kind of grew from there. So the brokerage really came about because, again, we were just kind of finding that we weren't getting everything we needed from wherever we were at that time. So we just decided to create what didn't exist. I mean, we didn't have the trainings that we offer. We didn't have it. So we just wanted to give other people who looked like us, who, you know, talked like us, who were us, an opportunity that we weren't afforded.
And I always find partnerships interesting. And that's why when I get two partners on, I like to talk about it, because it takes a lot for partnerships to work. But it also takes a lot of humility, because so many people always say that people would rather have complete control of $1 million business, of a $100,000 business, than share $1 million business. And was it comfortable for you guys to partner? Because I find in most partnerships, there's a balance, like skills that you don't have, maybe Brandy has, and Brandy's skills that you don't have, maybe Tiff has, and you got to kind of play off that and kind of stay in the wheelhouse that you're comfortable.
I think you said it perfectly. So we pretty much complete the whole package with our individual strengths and contributions to the business. Mm-hmm. Me and Brandy both will tell anybody that I stay in my lane, and that's where I stay, and it works for us. So Brandy is a marketing genius, from our app to our website, to any marketing material that you see, Brandy has created, outside of probably our most recent promo video. Everything else Brandy has created. I handle a lot of the, you know, back end things as it relates to the business, as well as, you know, lead a lot of the trainings with Brandy's input on topics that we should discuss. But that's something that comes natural to me. I love to train. I love to teach. And Brandy is just creative. She off the top of her head can,
that's nice.
You could say, you know, we talked about an app, and the next day she was sending me, you know, demos of the app. So that's just, once she says she's going to do something, and she becomes a bit obsessive about it, mm-hmm. But she makes it happen and saves us a lot of money doing so. So I think that for us, we had a lot of tough conversations that I think in some partnerships don't happen. You have to talk about the money, no matter how uncomfortable it is. You have to talk about
credit scores,
your current financial situation. And that includes involving your spouses in those conversations, because it's almost like another marriage. Our husbands both are very supportive, and you know, we all met and had those conversations so that we would all know where we were going, because starting a business, it does affect your family. As much as you keep the two separate, it definitely affects the family. So those were conversations that we had very early on, that we talked about. We, you know, share everything. We have accounts together. I don't ever go to sleep thinking that I'm going to wake up and the money's gone. But those are conversations that have to happen in the beginning. You have to set, roles and who's going to take care of this and who's going to take care of that. And then it just runs seamlessly because you know, the other person is taking care of what they're supposed to take care of. And that's from paying attention to things prior to us coming together. And like Brandy was saying, that it just worked. It was, I mean, we've had tough conversations where it's like, I don't agree with that. I don't want to do that. And then, you know, after the conversation, it may have gotten a little loud and then it's like, let's go get crabs. But you have to go through those things. We don't agree on everything. It's not a yes, yes, I just agree just to agree. We have those conversations. We talk about it. We move on from the moment and make the best decisions for the business.
And again, just to piggyback off of her, she said we do view this relationship almost like a second marriage, because there's never a time where you will ever hear myself or Tiffany, you know, saying things about each other in the public or whatever, that aren't going to shine a very positive light on, you know, on the other. So we definitely view it as a marriage, and we also just are always, I don't know if you ever realize that we kind of like try to outserve each other, like whoever, so yes. Nobody's needs go unmet. So nobody's needs go unmet. So we've actually even gone as far as having a therapy session together. We happen to have the same therapist. She was my therapist first, and then, you know, I gave her to Tiffany.
Y'all are true.
But we actually ended up having a therapy session together, because the truth is that we are responsible for each other's children, for each other's bills. And if a ball is dropped, it can affect everyone. So that was something, you know, and this is the part of partnership and the reality of the business that people don't discuss. And this is the part that's not glamorized, because there, for me, I was dealing with extreme guilt and feeling like I wasn't doing enough, because Tiffany is a great teacher. And when we do trainings together, I do just kind of attend and we just kind of bounce off of each other, and it really works. But when it comes to trainings and things like that, she's great at it. And that's just not my lane. But yeah, so we've gone as far as doing therapy sessions together. And it's something that we'll probably continue to do, because we spend all of our time together.
Like, you guys are like really feeding my soul right now. That was so good. let's kind of shift. Like I said, I spent some time on your website and I saw the mortgage programs and things that you links that you put on there for your clients to look at and maybe investigate. Do you guys, I don't want to say have a favorite, but do you find a program it's more amenable to buyers than others, or are they all kind of the same? Like, give me your guys' opinion on that type of thing.
So they're all a little different. It all comes down to individual buyers, because a lot of the programs, with down payment assistance programs, are what they are called. Some are grants, some are loans. Some are forgivable, meaning that you don't have to pay back if you stay in the property for a certain amount of time. Some you have to pay back regardless. So it all really depends. So that conversation happens. We do very extensive buyer's consultations. And that's where we're discussing what's your end goal, because that's going to determine what's going to work best for you. And that means you may have one, you know, program. So one very common is the Maryland Mortgage Program. That is actually a loan. It also requires that you take the interest rate of the program. So if a loan officer offers you a 2.65 interest rate, and today Maryland Mortgage's interest rates are 3.625, because you want to use the program, you're taking the 3.625. So it's really about educating every client individually, because everybody is looking for something a little bit different. So you have some that are specific to Baltimore City, some that are specific to the county, some that you can stack on top of each other, some that you cannot. A lot of the programs do have a credit requirement. Some don't. Some do have an income requirement. So it just really depends. It's not really necessarily one that is better, or it just really depends on the buyer and in their overall situation, and what they're looking for and what this property is for them. Is this a starter home? Do you intend to be there for 5 to 7 years? What's the next goal beyond that? Are all conversations that have to happen to really determine what's going to be the better fit for you in applying for, as well as household income, things of that nature. But a lot of that conversation also happens with the loan officer as they're reviewing their financial picture to guide them in the direction of what's going to be the better programs that work for them.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you guys do Maryland and DMV, right? You guys do DC, Virginia?
I'm actually licensed in DC, not Virginia, just DC and Maryland.
Okay. So what are the how do you guys feel about the markets right now? Like, what are you seeing? And I say this from a financial analyst expert. Like, I see the stock market not really reacting to the fact that I got 30 million unemployed people, that 30 million applied for unemployment last month, that the job creation isn't keeping up with inflation. So to me, the investment Wall Street market is definitely delusional from what's happening on Main Street. Do you guys see that? Are you seeing it in real estate as opposed to, is it a buyer's market, a seller's market? Are the prices inflated? Are they staying stable? Are they going down? Like, what are you guys kind of really seeing out there?
So prices inflated is an understatement. I would just kind of backtrack and say we have never seen, I don't think we were ever this busy. Like, I mean, we've been busy, but not this busy. So what we're seeing is, I'll just give you a recap of, what is this? September, the month of September. Mm-hmm. So we have been beating out offers. I think the most offers that we've recently seen on one property has been 14. And we're just talking a cute, renovated, updated end of group townhome in Reisterstown in Baltimore County. So we're seeing multiple offers. And when I say multiple, it's 10. It's 14. It is insane. So we're also seeing a lot of sellers pricing properties below what we know they're actually worth, or what they're going to, close out at purchase price wise. So we're even seeing, agents having to write offers that are $20,000 and $30,000 over and not asking for any closing assistance and not using any down payment assistance to have their offers accepted. So do you want to say anything?
It is very much a seller's market.
Yes.
So what we're facing, I think, a number of things, and we've had this conversation several times with a ton of colleagues in the past couple weeks. So we're saying a number of things. So there are a lot more buyers for a number of reasons. One being interest rates are much lower than what they have been in previous years. So now you have not only the buyers that were ready and prepared to purchase already because they were in the process pre-COVID. Now you have people that are like, well, previously when I got approved, I was only approved for this amount. Now that the interest rates are lower, I get a little bit more. I have a little bit more buying power. So now I'm going to jump back into the pool. You have people that were home for COVID that have decided that their needs are different. You have people who are going to be working from home and now need space for their children to virtually learn because we don't know how long that's going to last. You also have a lot of the buyers weren't necessarily buyers or in the buying pool, people who lost their job. A lot of people who lost employment weren't a part of our buying pool. The buying pool is a lot of people who are now working from home, who now have the flexibility to do more. You're spending less, so you're saving more. So now we have more prepared buyers that are able to forego down payment assistance programs, that are able to forego asking for seller's assistance, because now I'm more prepared buyer than what I was last year because I couldn't go anywhere for months. I'm still kind of nervous about going places, so I saved a little bit more. I didn't have expenses that I would have had from traveling back and forth to work, taking the kids, paying daycare, all of these things. I now saved a substantial amount of money in the time frame, so now I'm a little bit more prepared. You have a lot of sellers that did not want to put their homes on the market and still don't because of the traffic in and out of their home, showing their home if they're still living in their home. So that's one reason that we have lower inventory. And just in general, that it's just unbalanced in the amount of buyers that we have compared to sellers. And you have more sellers that are going to stay now because I can refinance and get my payment lower to where I wanted it to be anyway. So now it's beneficial for me to stay in my house opposed to moving. Mm-hmm. So refinances went up tremendously. tremendously. We talked to one lender, one title company that came and spoke to the agents. And I think for the month, they had 100 refinance in August.
And also what we are seeing also is that some sellers are putting their houses on the market because they see what homes in the neighboring, you know, on the neighboring streets are selling for, or their next door neighbor with their home sold for. I know it's something that I'm even considering, that Tiffany's considering. We don't know if we're ever going to see our, you know, homes valued at what they're valued at again. So it's something that many people are considering.
There is a home. I live in 21207 Baltimore City, Gwin Oak. There is a home that is two blocks over from me that is currently on the market for $420,000. If it sells, you will see me packing up on Instagram. I'm going to do a live and say, we out of here. But it's things like that that people are... I wasn't considering, at least for 2 years. This is my son's 11th grade year. So we were going to wait until he graduated. But now it's like, well, no, we'll buy a car sooner. He can travel back and forth. Correct. Because it just makes sense if that is where the values are going in my neighborhood.
Yeah. Hey, but are you guys concerned about anything? Because for me, I'm kind of freaking out because on my side of what I do is like, analysis of my life. So I'm like, the Fed are keeping these rates too low. Unemployment's going crazy. This is going to blow up in someone's face if they don't correct it very soon, because equities are out of this world. For instance, like Tesla and Apple split their stocks. And then I kept telling people, back off. They overvaluated. And sure enough, Thursday, Friday, and even today, the market has tanked specifically on those tech stocks. I'm worried about how that's going to play out in a Maryland area where you guys probably know about me. I have, 10,000-20,000 vacant houses in Baltimore City alone. And if people start doing these exchanges and prices are where they are, I'm worried about another 2008 type of collapse when it falls out from under it.
I think it's going to go one of two ways. I do think that we are going to see an increase in interest rates. I think that is the inevitable. It's no way that we'll be able to sustain at where interest rates are currently. That's just not going to happen. So I do think the interest rates are going to go. I don't think that we will be in a 2008 situation, but I think the housing market will definitely be affected. I think that it's going to be much harder in some of these neighborhoods where we have driven these prices up astronomically if it's not going to be continually maintained. So that's going to be twofold. To one, buyers still wanting to pay that amount because if inventory increases and now I have the pick of the litter, the prices are going to start to go down. But that's also going to play into investors being able to continually to invest in these neighborhoods. So it's going to be twofold in that being able to sustain those values.
What are your thoughts? And there's also so many things that have been put into place since, was it 08, 2008? You know, to ensure, I guess, to kind of ensure rather that the market is not going to tank the way that it previously did. So I wouldn't say that there's a worry. I mean, it is a constant conversation that Tiff and I do have. And all we can do is, I hate to kind of sound like this, but just kind of press forward and just hope for the best and just continue to advise our clients. But I wouldn't say that there's a worry, but you do have thoughts.
Okay.
In an election year, always, regardless of who wins, that always affects everything, you know, from consumer fear to just in general, it's really going to change no matter who wins. It's just election years always adjust some things. Rates always go crazy around that time as well. So I do think we're going to see some changes over the next couple months, but there's going to have to be a buildup after this. After things go to some sort of normalcy, there's going to have to be a buildup from the hit that we took this year.
Okay. Give me your top thing you would advise people looking to start the process of buying a home. What should they start getting in order first? What's the top thing?
So first, I would say continue to save as much as you can. I would say that is first and foremost, would you?
Yeah, I would just say preparation in general. And that's from, you know, maybe it's a brief conversation with a loan officer, a brief conversation with a real estate agent. But I would say in general, just preparation, having your ducks in a row, and the main thing being savings, and, you know, educating yourself on the resources that are out there as it relates to if down payment assistance is something that you want to learn about. I think a lot of buyers assume, or it's a misperception, that because I'm a first time home buyer, there is specifically things out there for me just for that. not necessarily understanding that as a first-time home buyer, there are things, you know, programs that are available, but they have their requirements. So a lot of first-time home buyers are just like, I get something because I'm a first-time home buyer. And that's not always the case. So I think, you know, not being afraid to reach to, you know, have a conversation with a loan officer and have a conversation with a real estate agent prematurely is not a bad thing, because you want to be prepared. So what happens a lot of times is that first time home buyers or buyers in general will say, okay, I'm in a lease and I need to move in 60 days and haven't had their credit pulled in who knows how long, have no idea what their credit looks like, have no idea what the things on their credit that may be affecting them. And now you're up against a time crunch. So even sometimes speaking to someone a year out to prepare is not a bad thing. A conversation costs you nothing.
And we are definitely open to, just back to that education piece, we're definitely open to having early conversations so you're prepared. So when you actually, you know, are 60 days away from your lease expiring, there's no surprises that come up on your credit report because you've been doing the work for the last few months with the lender and we've been in touch. So yeah, preparation, and we are definitely willing to prepare our clients. Another thing is really just trusting what your agent says, just trusting our professional opinion and just knowing, obviously we don't, you know, we may not know each other very well. But just knowing, you know, that we have your best interest at heart and we aren't going to guide you into a situation that we wouldn't, you know, want to find ourselves in.
Okay. Tell me the area where you guys sold your favorite house. I'm talking about the house where you like, I'll leave my house right now. Just, I don't even want to sell this one. Like, what area was that?
Favorite house? Wow,
that's hard.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I know. That's why I asked you, because you guys have sold so many houses. I'm sure you've seen your fair share.
Like, okay, can I have two? Can I have like one and a half?
Go ahead. You could have one and a half.
So I really love like the Pikesville Stevenson area, but then I also like areas like Hamden and Park. So I don't know. Like, I could be a city girl.
Right. That's quite two different dynamics.
You know, suburban life. I would probably have to say one of my favorites has been in Hamden. Well, I'm also looking at it from the like an investor's standpoint. Okay. Just because this was like a multi-unit, it had three units in it, and I'm just always looking at, you know, residual income. So I think that was probably one of my favorites. What about you?
I'm trying to think.
Tiffany has sold so many houses.
No, I'm trying to think of one that was just like, no, this is my house. I would probably say
condo.
Yeah, condo. So that is like my retirement is a condo overlooking the water.
And nice.
Floor to ceiling windows. So I would say condo in Baltimore City. Absolutely.
Okay, that's cool. Okay. I think that was my last question. Hold on. So in 5 years, what do you guys see the Baltimore real estate market? I see a lot of development going on, especially, I know me and Tiff have talked about the Somerset supposedly real estate development down there and like near the Perkins area or anything like that. So what do you think the real estate market in Baltimore is going to be like in 5 and 10 years?
So I'll just say, and I think we kind of have the same perspective, but, you know, maybe different. We've had an influx of buyers coming from Washington, D.C. To invest in Baltimore. We've had people coming from California that want to invest in Baltimore. And they're verbatim saying, we believe in Baltimore. We want to invest in Baltimore and we want to get in before it gets like, you know, too much like D.C. So I believe that we will definitely continue to see development and growth and people moving into areas that maybe they wouldn't have considered before, because the value is going to be there. And we are seeing a lot of, I would say, millennials moving into those areas that are sort of up and coming because they believe in the value, you know, that the property will hold in the future. So, yeah.
I would agree. I think there is going to be a lot of development, slow development. We don't move as quickly as places like DC, unfortunately. But I think it's the development is going to have to happen. And I think, again, it's going to be in areas that people were not considering prior. We see that now with just the renovation and rehabs that are happening in the neighborhoods that you're just like, oh, it's, you know, 5 or 10 renovators on the block right now. So I think that's going to happen, but it's also going to take a lot from our local politicians to really, for there to be a change there to keep these things on track. Because we all know, you know, you and I have had this conversation that there are so many things that have been on the books and so many things that have been on the plans probably, you know, since we were born that, you know, even looking at Emerson Avenue and that whole Vidoc situation that I feel like they have been working on since I was alive. I think we have to do a little more faster in the development and get on track with completing projects. Because I think there are a lot of just projects that are just incomplete in the entire city. So I think we'll get to that point, but it's going to be much slower than that of a DC.
And Tiff and I always have conversations just about what we want to see and what we plan to do. So we are planning on doing some things as well. To just bring our neighborhoods up and bring the value back into Baltimore City.
Okay. Well, ladies, I appreciate you guys spending some time with me today. I want you guys to take a second to promo Harris Hawkins, your social media, where people can reach you if they're interested, they're ready for housing now, if they want information on how they get prepared. I want you to give them all that good stuff.
Okay. So I would say the best place to start, if you do reach out to us on social media, that is totally fine. But one of the best places to start is our website, because we do offer lots of resources. So you can find us online at www.harrishawkinsandco.com. You'll be able to connect with an agent. You'll be able to get information on down payment assistance. You'll be able to get information on staging, kind of figure out if what your home is worth. So our website is kind of encompasses all of the information that you're going to receive from us. And you can find me on Instagram at the Brandy Hawkins and Tiffany Harris at
I am Tiff T-I-F-F underscore Harris the Realtor on Instagram.
And we also have an Instagram for Harris Hawkins and Co. So just Harris Hawkins and Co. on Instagram. Be sure to follow.
All right. So this has been another episode of The Culture's Money. I am your host, Jamal Vitos. You can find me on social medias at Jamal Vitos or Leo Graham Prince, whichever one you decide to look me up. I can't wait to talk to you guys soon.
That's right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Culture's Money. You can follow Jamal on Instagram and Twitter at Leo Grand Prince. That's Leo Grand Prince. You can also get in contact with Jamal via Facebook and LinkedIn. Just type in his name. That's Jamal, J-A-M-A-A-L, Vitos, V-E-T-O-S-E. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Culture's Money, baby.